Welcome everybody to the Comic Sheet. Oh yeah. I have no idea why I did that. I just felt like being deep and sexy like Derek's voice. But welcome everybody to the Comic Shoot. I am your host, Tyler. I am joined, as always, by Mr. Derek Baker.
Hello.
Say hello, Derek.
Hello.
Oh,
hello, okay. Hello.
There we go. See, just making sure. Before we jump into anything, I just want to remind everybody that the views and opinions on the show are mine and Derek's alone. Doesn't necessarily represent allcomic.com or the people that work at the site or the people that look at the site or all that fun stuff. Yeah, so today we're going to do something a little different. We're not having one topic. We're going to talk about a bunch of series that we really like and, you know, maybe convince you guys to pick something new up. Maybe convince each other to pick something new up. Because sometimes Derek likes weird shit and I just won't even try it. Vice versa. So, before we get into that even, I just want to say thanks to everybody for checking out the other two podcasts on the All Comic Podcast Network. Both Didn't Read It and the Splash Page Comic Cast. For those that are wondering, I don't know why, as of recording this, Didn't Read It Episode 6 is not on iTunes. We're working to fix that. So, hopefully it's up by the time you guys listen to this, and hopefully you can listen to the Comic Shoot on iTunes as normal.
I hope so.
So, Derek, what's going on, buddy?
Yeah. Oh, not too much. We went and saw the RoboCop reboot today.
Oh, and how was that?
It was actually, I was pleasantly surprised. I thoroughly enjoyed it, although I did kind of walk in with very low expectations, so maybe that was part of it.
I'm sure that helped.
Yeah, yeah. But yeah, it was very, very interesting. I thought it was well done, and it's different from the original, but it doesn't take anything away from the original.
Well, it doesn't have Red Foreman in it, so it can't be that.
That's true. That is true. It doesn't have Red Foreman murdering Alex Murphy. So
I can never look at a grenade the same way after that one scene.
Oh yeah, where he blows up the coke dude.
Yeah, he like uses his tongue all sexually to take the grenade pin out. Next thing you know, he's calling Eric a dumbass, and it's just like, well, careful, Eric, he's going to throw a grenade at you. Like, well, it's a shame that they didn't do that R-rated, you know, the same as the first one. I know they went for, like, PG or PG-13 or something, so kind of boxed themselves into that, but I haven't seen it yet, so I can't really say anything. Pre-recording, Derek and I were talking about some of the series that we are going to cover today, and it turns out that both of our lists include The Saga of the Swamp Thing by Mr. Alan Moore. So I think that is a good place to start. We're both on the same page with that. So yeah, Derek, why don't you start things off and, we'll see where we go.
Yeah. Okay. You know what? believe it or not, I actually read some of this as a child, picking up like random issues here and there because, like I said, I was a fan of Swamp Thing when I was a kid because of that awful, awful, awful cartoon. But yeah, it's always had a special place in my heart. Once I got, once I got a chance to actually get some more of these issues, and then I got, the nice collections and whatnot, really just reading through the entire thing. He really, really just did a lot for Swamp Thing while still, you know, keeping him grounded in sort of like the superhero kind of reality, I guess, in a lot of ways.
Yeah, it was his own thing, but every now and then it would kind of trickle into to the rest of the DC universe.
Yes,
Before you go, I just want to remind everybody that this is not a kid's book, contrary to what Derek was reading as a kid.
Yeah. Well, my parents didn't know that.
Oh, it's a green guy. Yeah, yeah. It's about plants and stuff. Oh, okay. Well, go ahead, little Derek. I don't know why they called you little Derek, but...
I don't think they ever did, but... I really appreciated, as a fan of, like, the whole, DC Universe and the Marvel 616. I liked that, he had his own little section of the universe, but, they let you know that this was very much in the DC universe, and just having Alan Moore, write, the DC universe in any capacity is just, fantastic. And there's just, you know, just your typical Alan Moore stuff, you know, your deep, you know, philosophical and political, you know, mumbo jumbo. And, you know, you can just, you know, read an issue of that and just dwell on it for like weeks thinking about like, you know, I wonder what he meant by that or, you know, whatever. And, oh yeah. Also, wow. What's his face? What's his name?
Len Wine.
Len Wine. Yeah. Fantastic artist.
Well, Len Wine was, one of the ones that created it. I believe it was, Stephen Bissett that handled most of this saga with, Alan Moore. I think there was Stan Watch and Pat Broderick and, couple others. I think Phil Hester was in there at one point towards the end, maybe. For the most part, Stephen Bissett, I think, handled the art for this.
Okay.
And
all right,
Len Wein and Bernie Wrightson created the character initially in the early 70s. I think the first one was like 72.
It's funny because Marvel wanted to initially sue them for Swamp Thing because Man-Thing actually predates Swamp Thing. However, DC pointed out that those two characters are actually a ripoff of another character, which I cannot remember that character's name at the moment, but that's why they never sued DC, was because they were just like, well, if anybody has any right to sue anybody, it's this company, and they should sue both of us.
Apparently they were both similar characters to whatever the Heap is.
Yes. Yeah. Okay. That's it. Yeah. That's something I'm not really. The Heap. Okay. Yeah. I'm not real.
No. The Heap apparently first appeared in 1942.
Yes.
So he really predates everything. Image Comics apparently reimagined the Heap at one point. If somebody wants to track that down, because it's probably easier than the original stuff in the
70s, I'm sure
earlier than that. So
yeah, I'm sure. I just saw that. Yeah, I didn't. Wow, I wasn't even aware. But yeah. I mean, you know, Alan Moore's just fantastic, and you know,
Yeah, go ahead.
No. I was just gonna say, like, he really, you know, my vision of Alec Holland is just Alan Moore through and through.
Yeah, exactly. I think before we really talk about Alan Moore, anybody that's skeptical about the series, or anybody that, you know, has heard negative things and read negative things that Alan Moore has done or said, I think it's safe to say, get your head out of your ass and just separate the guy from his work.
He's crazy, and you know, there's things that he says that I completely agree with, and things that he says that I don't, and you know.
Yeah. So, and I know I've had chats with a couple of people when they had asked me, you know, oh, hey, what should I check out for a comic shop? And I was just kind of roaming around the shop, just being a weird guy looking at random stuff, and I turned somebody towards the Cycle of Swamp Thing, and he's like, oh, Alan Moore. He's like, isn't that guy that like hates the Watchmen or something? And of course.
Yeah.
You know, right at the beginning, I was like, "Oh, I'm gonna smack you." You know, I know you explained how, you know, he created the Watchmen, and then he fell out with DC, and he's kind of doing his own thing. And yes, he's a little bit of a mountain man. He's a little, you know, a little crazy, I guess. But
he
has his own belief system, and he sure as hell backs himself. And yeah, you know, he hasn't wavered. He hasn't, you know, gone back on his word and or what he said or whatever. So. If nothing else, you know, you respect him for what he is, and look at Saga of the Swamp Thing as something that was, you know, that's separate from the personal, you know, the personality that is Alan Moore. So I just wanted to say that because I know, like I said, a couple of people I've talked to were turned off because Alan Moore's name on the cover, and it's like, you're an idiot.
Yeah. I mean, I have to do that with Frank Miller a lot. I mean, Frank Miller is a phenomenal talent, and I actually, you know, a lot of his current political views I'm actually not a huge fan of, but I'm able to, you know, separate his personal, you know, views, you know, as opposed to, you know, his work. I can actually look at his work and, you know, and appreciate it for what it is. Now he hasn't always been like that. So a lot of his early work is like, you know, actually the polar opposite of his political views currently.
You know, you said, you know, like 10 times in that sentence.
Oh, sorry.
I'm like sitting here. I'm like 1, 2, 3, 4. Oh. I almost had to pull off my socks, man. But anyway, yes. Alan Moore's name is on the cover, but he, you know, did a fantastic job, and arguably it's his best creation or his best work.
Yep.
You know, within the realm of DC, next to Watchmen, I guess. I like Saga of the Swamp Thing more than Watchmen personally. I think, you know, Derek and I, like we said, chose a couple of series that we would talk about and kind of, you know, people that might not have tried it or read it or whatever.
Yeah.
Watchmen wasn't up there. It was definitely Swamp Thing if I was going to pick something.
I agree. Yeah. Oh, yeah, me too. I mean, Watchmen's great, but I think Swamp Thing. I think his Swamp Thing is I think is my personal favorite of his.
Oh, definitely. For those that aren't aware either, there is 6 volumes. He did not start this volume of Swamp Thing, which is actually volume 2 after the Len Wein, Bernie Wrightson and run. He did not start it at number 1. He actually started 1984 with Saga of the Swamp Thing number 21. Initially, before that, you know, I'm not even sure who was writing it. I think it might have been Len Wein that was writing the first part of this. I don't even know. Anyway, somebody was writing it before. Who really cares? As soon as Alan Moore came on, everybody forgot what was going on. It's interesting to note that, you know, this Swamp Thing only really happened after legendary Vertigo editor Karen Berger came on board. And gave, whoa, what are you drinking? It sounds like something delicious.
Actually, it is a mug root beer.
Oh, okay, I take that back. I was thinking it was like liquor or...
No.
Bark's root beer even would have been a better choice. but yeah, no, it's interesting to note that Karen Berger was, you know, instrumental in letting Alan Moore pretty much do whatever he wanted with the character and add his own stuff to it. Alan Moore gave us Constantine around...
Yes.
I'm trying to think. I think he was in the second trade or third trade or something.
Yeah. Funny story. The first appearance of John Constantine is actually the first comic book that I ever read.
Oh, really?
Yep.
Mr. Wikipedia says that was Saga of the Swamp Thing number 37.
Yep.
June 1985.
Yeah, I couldn't remember the exact number, but yeah, that it's etched in my the cover is etched in my brain forever. That's what sent me on this path.
This terrible path of self-destruction and throwing your money away, huh?
Yep. Pretty much.
So, okay. There's so much in these 6 trades. You know, that spanned, I think it was issue 21 to what the hell, what did he end on, like 80 something, I think. I'm trying to think, blah, 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 blah. I can't remember how many, but anyway, throughout the 6 trades, number 65, I guess, or 64 would have been his last one.
Okay,
but out of all those, I know for me there's a storyline that really stands out, and that's like the Blue Planet storyline, where Swamp Thing gets destroyed on Earth, and he like tries to jump out of the green to save his mind so he can regrow, and he like ends up on another planet or something, and it's all blue, and he like recreates Louisiana I think that's one of the best stories of Swamp Thing, or maybe even Alan Moore has ever done. That was one of my favorite ones for sure.
Oh yeah,
that's it. Oh yeah, that's all you got. That's all you got for that, Derek?
No. The whole Blue Planet thing was great. I loved it.
So much so that Derek has no comments to make on it. I like the little touch that Charles Soule recently did in the recent in the new Swamp Thing, where he kind of like did a little bit of a wink and a nod to the Blue Planet Swamp Thing. That was cool too. I don't know if you read that.
No, I'm reading it. I'm just trying to think of what that was specifically. Now I can't remember.
I think he was in the green, and they were like showing him other Swamp Things, and
gotcha.
Victorian guy was like, "Hey, come look at this," and it was like, the blue guy.
Yes, yeah, that, yeah. Okay, all right. Now I remember.
Wow. Well, you're very chatty tonight, Derek. I think I've talked a lot. it's only been 15 minutes, and I've said the most words.
I don't know.
What do you want to say about Swamp Thing, Derek?
Well, I pretty much said everything that I wanted to say, you know, just...
All right, everybody. The point is, I guess, buy Saga of the Swamp Thing. They definitely. The hardcovers are out of print now. Thankfully, I picked all six of mine up. So the trades are out. I think they've just re-released five or four or something. So they're out there. Go buy them. I guess since Derek is done talking about Mr. Swampy, we'll let him pick the next book he would like you guys to read.
Okay. Oh, one of mine?
Yep.
Okay. How about this? All right. This is somewhat newer. The original Marvel Knights Spider-Man, the first 12 issues were written by Mark Miller and the art was done by Terry Dodson.
I like Terry Dodson's work.
Yes, yes. It's probably my favorite Spider-Man in the the last 30 years at least.
Seriously? No, let me take that you like 25. It more than what Dan Slott is doing right now, but
oh, I know, and yeah, we all know what a fan I am of that. But at least 25 years, I'd say. It's really cool. Like he's right off the bat, like he sets this this desperate and like very violent tone where. He comes home from this fight with Green Goblin and he's all beat up and Mary Jane's asking him what the heck happened to him. And he's like, oh, you know, I got in this fight with Norman and all this, you know, we were, you know, battling, you know, all over New York and he takes off his shirt and he has like this nasty, like it looks like a chunk taken out of his like hip. And she's like, oh my God, like what happened? What is that? And he's like, oh no, you know, just whatever. No big deal. You know, Norman bit me. Like, and so like Norman literally like bit him and took like this giant chunk out of his hip.
As one might do.
Yes. Yes. And that's like, that's just how it starts. That's how it, you know, that's how he kicks things off. And, he does the first arc, really like, focuses on, like taking some of his villains that had, you know, over the years become kind of lame, like Electro and Vulture, and he makes them legit threats.
I was gonna say, aren't they still lame villains?
Well, he tries really hard to, you know, to make them, you know, like serious villains, and you know, unfortunately that didn't really, you know, cross over. It's just sort of like in this little 12 issue run where they're where they're threats, and that's also when Matt Gargan, that's when he got the Venom symbiote, Yeah, that happened during that run.
I thought Marvel Knights was supposed to be like an offshoot, like similar to their Max line or Elseworld on DC. I didn't know if it was still tied into, because Gargan or whatever carried on for like a little while after that.
Yeah. Right? With the Marvel Knights line, it's sort of like whatever the creators want it to be, really. Like Daredevil, like the whole Marvel Knights Daredevil stuff, like that actually took place in the 616. But then there's other stuff, you know, there's other, you know, Marvel Knights lines where they're like, oh no, that doesn't count. That's an alternate universe or whatever.
Didn't they technically do the 2099 stuff under Marvel Knights? Was that?
No, that no, no. They're like,
that was just part of the 616 in the future.
No, it actually has its own specific number. I just don't know what the number is right now, but it's like a complete, yeah.
So, okay. Is it just like a 12 issue run, or does somebody take over afterwards? Does it carry on?
Somebody took over, and then, that's when it kind of got crappy. Like, I can't even remember who wrote it after that. But it was it got crappy, and then it was just tying in with other things, and you know, who.
So is the 12 issue story like self-contained, or do you need to read the rest of it to finish that volume of Marvel Knights Spider-Man?
Well, I mean, you can just read like the first volume, like the first and second volumes, and you're good.
Okay, you don't have to continue to get the whole story or anything.
Oh no! It's pretty much after that it jumps into what story? Oh, the other is the story that was going on at the time, like, and it crossed over with all the other, you know, books and all the other Spider-Man books and whatnot, and it just got, you know, it just got stupid, and it was just another just lame book, and you know, it wasn't it lost that Mark Miller edge to it, but once he left,
well, as it would without Mark Miller.
Well, yeah. I mean, they didn't even, you know, they didn't even attempt to keep it. Like, I'm not saying it had to be exactly like Mark Miller's work, but you know, they didn't even attempt to keep it edgy, and it was just another Spider-Man book. You know, that was just okay.
Well, fair enough. Yeah. Okay, well, that's another one of yours. It's going to come to as no surprise to anybody that has listened to me or chatted with me or followed on Twitter or anything else, that my series, or one of them that I think you should read, is Hellboy. You guys are a great time to start now. They have its 20 years of Hellboy. As of, I guess technically 20 years was last year, because it was 93 that he started. But they're doing this 2014 as their 20th anniversary extravaganza. And there's a cool book coming out that's like a 20-year celebration. It's hardcover. They're going to have a bunch of stories, you know, like popular stories and, you know, stories that everybody really likes. It's going to be collected that way and kind of celebrated. So if you guys have never read any Hellboy, that might be a great place to start. For me, and for those that don't know, Hellboy is created by Mike Mignola. Also, again, if anybody is... heard me talk or rant or rave, it's usually about him. He is my hero. If I ever meet him in person, I will probably cry like a little schoolgirl and wet myself. So Mike, when that inevitably happens, I'm sorry ahead of time. Derek, you haven't read this, right?
I've read bits and parts of, you know, bits and pieces of Hellboy. Seed of Destruction is actually one of my favorite, you know, miniseries of all time, really. Right. It's up there.
Seed of Destruction, again, those that don't know, was the first four issues. I guess that originally started in 94, so I guess I can see why 94 is their 20th anniversary, because that was when the first issue came out. It wasn't when the first appearance of Hellboy was.
I've read parts of it, and I'm actually reading it never comes out, but the Hellboy in Hell I'm actually enjoying.
I heard something that number 6 might come out in May or something.
Okay.
So, and then they got the first 5 out, so the trade should be anytime now, and then they're going to do the artist edition of that stuff.
At least I'm not wasting a lot of money on it.
Well, you know, I'm going to jump through this microphone and smack you, because you do need to read them all. There is a ton of trades and stories right now, so it can look daunting to people. There's like $50 library editions that do a great job of collecting big chunks at a time. There's 6 right now. I of course own them. They're amazing. You need to own them. But the best thing I can say about Hellboy is it's a nice kind of change from like your regular superhero stuff. If you're really big into like DC and Marvel stuff, or just one or the other, Hellboy is a really nice kind of change. At the same time, it still feels familiar, like in the first couple Hellboy stuff, and I guess all the way through, it's kind of a theme. You know, Nazis are the bad guy. Nazis are the perfect bad guy for any kind of story, really, because everybody can hate them and everybody can relate to hating them. And like the main villain is Rasputin from the Tsarist era. He's trying to bring back the beast that's going to destroy the world, and use Hellboy to do it. I don't want to give too much away, because I want you guys to, you know, read it and explore it and love it and cherish it like I do. Put it up against anything, and it's going to beat it. Anything now, like the new stuff now, Hellboy in Hell, I would put it next to anything. And I dare you to say that Hellboy in Hell is not the better product, the better issue, the better writing, the better art.
Saga.
No. Hellboy's way better than Saga.
Really?
Oh, yeah.
Huh.
Doesn't compare, man.
I could see the argument for it, sure.
I love Saga. Anybody knows that? Me as well. I love Saga, but no. Hellboy is just richer and deeper, and yes, it's been going on longer than Saga, and maybe if Saga was 20 years old at, you know, the same time as Hellboy, maybe my opinion would be different, but I doubt it. There's just more to Hellboy. Hellboy as Hellboy as a character is a better character than the characters in Saga. Okay, and I love Saga.
Sure. Plus, he's really flexible.
Yeah, he can do anything, and you know, Mignola pulls from like fables and stories and stuff, like the Baba Yaga from folklore, who had like the wooden house on a chicken foot. She's like a reoccurring, I don't want to say villain necessarily, maybe guide's a better word for it, but she's, you know, been out through the story throughout, and he'll take like crazy little folklores from like Ireland that he read like one time in a book, and he folds it into the Hellboy universe, and Hellboy then, you know, meets the fairy or whatever and tries to fight him, or they try to help him or whatever. Like, it's all of the stories initially in the Hellboy numbering, they were all like, okay, this is Seed of Destruction 1, 2, 3, 4. And then the next one was the Wolves of St. August, you know, number 5. And then the next one was this. It wasn't a, what's the word where it's continually numbered, Derek? Sequence?
Yes.
It wasn't numbered in sequence. Like, it was just numbered based on stories. Because they're all just little pockets of stories that, you know, it drove the story forward, but they could still be fairly read, you know, in a self-contained manner. Anybody reading it now, like, if anybody tried to read The Fury, which is the last 3 issues before Hellboy and Hell, I dare say that you're going to be lost. It's going to be great. You're going to love it. Duncan Fegredo, who did art on it, is just bananas. I love his art. His art is like second to just Mignola. He's so good in the Hellboy universe and anywhere, quite frankly. But if you read that, there's 20 years of stuff that you're missing. You know, why is Hellboy at this point? Why does he have to do this? Why is he so bitter? Why is this happening? You know, it's just a, man, it's just fantastic. And I honestly could talk about it for the entire hour.
I agree with you.
I'm trying not to give too much away. Like, I really don't want to explain, you know, some of the stuff that happens in The Fury or some of the stuff that happens in The Wild Hunt or whatever, but it's just great. Right around, I think it was like, if you count sequentially, it was issue 25 or something, or 24. Mignola actually stopped doing the art. He had a couple of guest artists before, but for the most part, he did it all. Richard Corbin, was a guest artist for a couple of things. And then I think Duncan Fegredo did the majority of it. And that was because Mignola was just, his brain was like thinking of all these really complex stuff. I remember reading one time he did the little short story called The Island. And I think that was his last one that he did. And he said it just killed him to do it. Like, it was just so intricate and so much stuff going on that he couldn't write it and draw it and do it and ink it and do all this stuff at the same time. So that's when he had to trust somebody else, cue Duncan Fegredo, to bring them in and, you know, allow them to work on his baby, basically. Which, again, paid off extremely well because his stuff they did in, like, The Wild Hunt and The Storm and Darkness Calls and The Fury, it's just, man, I could stare at that art all day. Look at the library editions. I could literally stare at the art all day.
Yeah.
It's that good. And again, I challenge you to put it up next to anything else. Once, if you read all the Hellboy and you know what's going on, and it's gonna beat it. Even the stuff from 20 years ago, it's that good. Initially, John Byrne helped Mignola get it off the ground, writing wise. So that was really cool too. Hellboy first appeared in color and I have it on the wall, so I'm gonna turn and look at it because I can't remember. Next Men issue number 3 of 4 in the Faith. I don't know, storyline, I guess. Hellboy's on the cover. He just kind of appeared in the story. It was, you know, still through Dark Horse and whatnot, and that was his very first appearance, and then John Byrne helped Mignola do Seed of Destruction. And then from there, it was, you know, Wake the Devil, and then a bunch of little stories, and, you know, it, just great stuff. Man, I could literally talk about almost every story, and I'm getting all excited and amped up. I want to just say, screw the podcast, and I just want to go start reading Hellboy. I love it with every fiber of my being. Like, I plan, like, tattoos of Hellboy and, you know, Mignola art, and I just love it. It's fantastic. And anybody that, you know, wants something great to read, you need to go back, you need to buy just the first trade even, and you're going to be hooked. There's no question. It's that good.
Yeah, It is.
And Derek, you need to read it now because you told me.
I know.
Bits and pieces, and you can't just jump to Hellboy in Hell, and you're missing so much stuff.
Yeah, I know. I'm missing quite a bit, actually.
So you need to read it. And like I said, I think there's like 12 trades right now, or 6 library editions. So I mean, it's up to you guys what you want to spend into it. The library editions are totally worth it.
They are.
But I mean, the trades are worth it too. So however you want to read it, the point is you guys need to read it. It's fantastic, yeah. And it will continue to be fantastic until Mignola decides to wrap it up. Which, according to again interviews with him that I've read, he has no plans. He basically said he can draw and write Hellboy, you know, an issue here, issue there, until you know his hands stop working. So, yay!
Yeah. Well, sometimes it doesn't matter how you get it. It's just so good that it matters that you get it.
Yeah, it's again. Normally I hate waiting for anything. So I mean, waiting for all these Hellboy and Hell issues is just kicking my ass, and it just sucks. But when May comes, I'm gonna read the issue like 10 times, so it'll be worth it. And now, Derek, I relinquish the floor to you.
Okay. All right. Okay. All right. I'm gonna talk about another. All right.
I got. Say one. All right one more time. I'm gonna smack you.
There's more. Okay. There's big, comic book crossovers and whatnot. You know, that's kind of a fad and has been for years and years and years. But I think that there's like two different crossovers. There's Civil War. And then there's everything else. So yeah, my next
pick. Read this one. Cool.
My next pick would be Civil War. Also, once again, we're going back to Mark Miller. Also written by Mark Miller. Steve McNiven.
Are you just on a Mark Miller kick or what?
No. He just it just so happens that he's written a lot of my like some of my most favorite, stories of all time, really. It just happens that he wrote them.
So do you follow his creator-owned stuff?
Yeah, I do. And I really, pretty much just anything he writes, really, I really... Actually, his Kick-Ass is actually, I think, the worst.
Fair
which
enough.
Is weird. Yeah.
Okay, so before you get back into Civil War, I just want to clarify.
Okay.
I bought and read just the hardcover of Civil War. Okay, so it's just the 7 issues or whatever. But there was like Civil War Fantastic Four and Civil War X-Men and Spider-Man. I heard that Spider-Man was great. I heard like the Fantastic Four and X-Men were shit and useless. What are you talking about when you're talking Civil War? Are you just talking the 7 issues?
I'm actually talking about the actual 7 issues.
Okay.
The rest of this, all the tie-in shit. I read the majority of it, and I'll say this, it's like any crossover, you have your tie-ins that are awesome, and then you have your ones that are just kind of garbage. And, Civil War was pretty much the same. Like, there was some of it that was really awesome and some of it that wasn't, but the main Civil War book was incredible. And, just made me fall in love with all of these characters all over again, especially Captain America. It just really tugged at my heartstrings. Especially, do you remember that Punisher scene where Captain America is beating the fuck out of Punisher, Punisher.
It's been a while. I remember Cap kicking his ass at one point, but I probably wouldn't have been able to tell. It was in Civil War.
It was in Civil War, and he's beating the fuck out of so Captain America's beating the crap out of the Punisher, and Captain America says, "What are you doing? Fight back, fight me." And Punisher says, "No, not you." Punisher.
Ooh, that kind of gave me goosebumps.
He respected Steve Rogers so much he would not fight him.
I might have to go read Civil War again. I don't have enough of a backlog.
it's just so good, and Mark Miller just nailed all of these characters. Now, it was kind of stupid that they had Spider-Man like reveal his identity to the world
And that one within, kind of took me back a little bit. I was like, what?
Why? Yeah, it works in the story. Like, it's just afterwards, like, it during all the aftermath, it was kind of dumb. And then Marvel was like, oh, wait, we have to do away with this because that was stupid.
Didn't they get, like, Stephen Strange did, like, a fucking voodoo curse and everybody forgot or some shit?
Wasn't that Mephisto?
Was it Mephisto that did it?
Okay, yeah,
it was one somebody magical. Yeah. I don't remember who did it then.
Yeah. I can't remember. Yeah, now I can't. No. Now I can't remember. It's going to drive me nuts. Okay.
We'll have people that give you crap for not remembering afterwards.
Oh, I'm sure. I'm sure people will give me crap for it, especially since I'm such a big Spider-Man guy. I can't even remember. But anyway, yeah, just every issue was great. During the time when it was coming out, it was a little annoying because Steve McNiven he's not exactly known for being on time. So there was some delays here and there. But you know, it was all worth the wait because the book is freaking gorgeous. And the story is just like, it's just everything that you could ever want out of like a big, you know, DC Marvel crossover, you know, and
DC Marvel crossover.
Yeah, well, you know what I mean, event, big Marvel, like out of a big.
I was like, there was no DC guys in this event. What are you talking about?
No, everything that you could possibly want out of an event that DC or Marvel would do, like basically, is what I'm trying to say.
Gotcha.
Yeah, they're. Yeah, it's and also, you know, it's set, you know, it's set up a lot of other, you know, pretty cool crossover events down the line, like it's set up Norman Osborn and a lot of all kinds of crap.
You're so excited you can't even spit it out.
I can't even spit it out. There was a lot of yeah. I mean, it's set up a lot of really awesome Avengers books, and you know, and then the whole the death of Captain America stuff, directly came out of that, and you know, Bucky being Captain America for a while, and you know, that was kind of cool for a little bit. But
and that would that would mean that the Winter Soldier came out of it.
No.
Wasn't the Civil War stuff right around the time when the Winter Soldier came back? Or
I guess about a year or two after that took place.
Long? I thought Bucky came back and it was a big. I'm still reading it myself. I honestly haven't read it yet.
Okay,
but I'm in the process. I thought Bucky came back, and then I thought like shortly thereafter Cap was killed.
Shortly after the events of that of Brubaker's Winter Soldier storyline, maybe it was like a little less than a year, I guess. Like it then Civil War happened.
Okay, and then he. I guess my timeline is backwards. Yeah. I thought he was killed like right. I don't know. Whatever. We'll take your word for it. I'm not there, so I can't argue, and I'm just apparently completely screwed up. And you guys can comment on the page and tell me I'm an idiot. Comment. We love comments.
Yeah, exactly.
Okay, so out of Civil War, what do you think that was the best kind of change or shakeup to Marvel? I mean, a lot of the stuff kind of, you know, eventually returned back to status quo, but what do you think was the best kind of spin to come out of there?
Probably the whole Norman Osborn thing.
Now, when you say the whole Norman Osborn thing, you gotta
have to. His rise to power. His rise to power sort of came out of the whole Civil War nonsense.
And that's when that was the Thunderbolt stuff, or was that a lot?
Yes. Yeah, the Thunderbolt stuff came out of that. And then there was the whole Fantastic Four, where Mr. Fantastic and Invisible Woman were sort of not together, and Black Panther and Storm actually took their place in the Fantastic Four. That's probably my favorite.
I don't know what the hell is going on with your mic tonight, Derek, but holy crap, you're starting to sound like a robot.
No, sorry.
And we're live, folks, so I ain't fixed it.
Yeah.
And by live, I mean we're recording. I'm too lazy to edit, so screw it, but you know.
And Iron Fist and Doctor Strange joined the Avengers. That came out of that, so you know. That's awesome.
So lots of good stuff then.
Okay. Yeah, yeah.
You're making me want to reread the Civil War again, and I really just don't have time for that, you bastard.
It's super good. It's really good.
Yeah, I think I picked it up on a sale on a whim, and I got the hardcover, and I was like, oh, yeah, that's pretty good. And then I read it, and I was like, well, should I read Spider-Man and all that stuff? And he's like, well, if you really, really want to, he's like, read Spider-Man. But like, he's like, otherwise, meh, don't even bother.
Yeah, I would pretty much tell you the same thing. The Spider-Man stuff, if you really want to, yeah, it's pretty cool. But everything else is kind of, hit or miss.
Fair enough. Okay, so I'm going to pass the ball back to me here, and
okay,
so it comes no surprise that my follow-up to Hellboy is going to be the series BPRD, Bureau for Paranormal Research and Defense, directly spitting out of the Mignola-verse or the Hellboy universe or whatever you want to call it. I prefer the Mignola-verse personally, but yes. Hey, I'm crazy that way. It started, you had Mignola and you had Guy Davis, who did art for a long, long time, and he did fantastic art, just great, you know, his own mark on it. It was, I think it was shortly after or shortly just before. Well, I'm trying to think here. I got to go back and read it, but correct me if I'm wrong, those out there. It'll probably be Mark Tweedle, who's on Twitter, who knows way more about Hellboy than me, and I bow to his knowledge. But I believe it's just, the series starts just after Hellboy quits. So, yeah, spoiler alert there, but Hellboy quits the BPRD to kind of go do his own thing and roam the world and, you know, have adventures and, you know, it's, you know, all that fun stuff. But, I'm saying you know almost as much as you, Derek. It's driving me bananas.
Sorry.
So anyway, the BPRD initially started in a similar numbering fashion as Hellboy was, where it was, you know, the first story was 1, 2, and 3 of Hollow Earth. And it kind of gives you, a look at the characters, you know, of Abe Sapien, Liz Sherman, Roger, Johann Kraus, I'm trying to think of who the Dr. Kate Corrigan, I guess, and all that cool stuff. You know, just a good intro, really. Actually, I guess Christopher Golden, a longtime Mignola collab, helped him with that. I didn't know that, so that's really cool. Then we had, it kind of went along. There was the big over-arc Plague of Frogs that happened, which is really great. If you guys see the Plague of Frogs omnibus editions of BPRD, there's 4 of them, and it collects all the way up to their Hell and Earth stuff. So I think it's like a good 80 issues or so, maybe 79. They're awesome. Oh, they're so good and so worth it. You get stuff with Plague of Frogs, which, you know, had a big impact and still kind of impacts the series today. And that's a good thing about Mignola too, is once something happens, he doesn't go back on it. It's not like Marvel and DC's like, oh, you know, this happened and we rebooted our universe and, you know, we're back to number one and none of this happened except for maybe this and I think we'll cherry pick that. You know, that doesn't happen. I believe in Mignola's words were like, you know, if somebody dies, they're dead. If something gets destroyed, it's destroyed. You know, that's the way it is, you know. And it's just fantastic. Obviously, Mignola can't do it all himself, so he has big props to John Arcudi, A-R-C-U-D-I. I suck with names, guys. I'm sorry. But big props to him. He's also a big architect in the BPRD universe. I know Mignola gives him tons and tons of credit, and it's totally, totally deserved. A lot of characters, you know, John created, and he kind of takes him with it. And I read an interview one time where they're saying that, you know, kind of Mike kind of can write, you know, his characters, and if John creates a new character, Mike's like, yeah, John, you know, you write them. You write their with the thinking and their speech and all that stuff, you can do all that, right? So, you know, big trust on his part. It's just nothing but praise, really. Basically, just kind of an overarch, you get this big, you know, War of the Frogs and Plague of Frogs War, and, you know, they're fighting basically big frogs. You guys, if you read the Hellboy stuff at the beginning, you kind of see the frogs a little bit. Are you smoking, Derek?
No.
Your mic's making weird sounds.
Oh, sorry.
You're interrupting my thought, you son of a bitch. I let you talk about Mark Miller. All right?
Go. Keep going. I'm listening.
Have you read any BPRD, I guess I should say? Have you read any of it?
Nope. No. I haven't read a single issue of it.
One day when I have actual money and I'm not broke as fuck, I'm going to like send you the first omnibus or something because it's so good. Eventually there's this big war with the frogs and stuff, and it gets into what they're kind of titling BPRD now, which is BPRD Hell on Earth. And again, with Magnolia, you know, when something gets destroyed or something crazy happens, it stays that way. So it's been, you know, hell on earth and monsters everywhere, destruction and death and violence and, you know, just terribleness for, geez, like 40 issues. Like, and it's still going. It's still ongoing. So that's really cool to see. How they've, you know, built, again, everything with Mignola. Mignola will say one thing one time in, like, issue number two, and then he'll bring it back in, like, issue 100 and be like, oh, holy shit, this is why everything's destroyed, you know. Just really cool stuff. Eventually, Guy Davis did leave to do his own stuff. They got Tyler Crook to help out, and his art is obviously his own, but it has kind of a similar flair to Guy Davis, which is great, so it wasn't a huge... like jolt. They sometimes get James Herron on and like Cam Stewart and stuff. So essentially my point, Lawrence Campbell, essentially my point is that Mignola, you know, he always has the best. There is always the best with working with him, whether it's co-writing or art or inking or Mr. Dave Stewart on colors, who basically colors everything with Mignola's name on it, and he is just a master of color beyond masters. You know, it's just always top-notch. And again, it's another series that, unless you're comparing it maybe to Hellboy itself, I challenge you to, you know, compare it to something else and, you know, see if it's better or worse. And I guarantee you it's going to be better, because it's just, it's, there's so much heart and thought and planning, not that there isn't in, you know, more mainstream stuff, but it's kind of, I don't know, what's the word, maybe more serious, more final when stuff happens. It's hard to explain, but it's different, but it's most certainly better. And Derek, I don't know why you haven't read this at all, but
yeah, I know.
You need to read Hellboy up to like the Conqueror Worm in trades, and then you can jump to BPRD and understand what's going on. And I guarantee you're going to end up buying like all the freaking trades and
I'm sure.
Like it's so good.
Yeah, I'm sure Nicole will thank you for that one.
Hey, I'm pretty sure I owe you a couple of fuck yous for telling me stories, and I'm sure Kayla does too. So, like, damn it, why don't you gotta tell them how good the story is?
Yeah.
I think half of my pull, like, I'm only back on Green Lantern, I think, because of you. So there you go, you asshole.
Yeah. Turtles.
Turtles. Yeah, I read all of those in 1 week. So there you go.
Yeah.
So yes, again, it was a lot. It was a quick, short rant, but BPRD is you know, right up there with Hellboy. They're both fantastic. Anything you see Mignola's name on is great. Just as a quick little side note, if you guys find the trade for Mignola's Gotham by Gaslight with Batman, it's an Elseworld story where he's tracing down Jack the Ripper in Victorian London.
Yeah, good stuff.
Oh, it's just, and he draws it too, and it's just, oh, yeah, so
beautiful.
Great.
So gorgeous.
So, oh, and I forgot to mention that BPRD used to have those numbered by stories, and now it's just consecutive numbering since number 100. So they are currently on like 116. So if that's daunting, just start at number one and don't worry about what they're at now. Just read it from the back and, you know, you'll get there. I think, Derek, you got time for one more, maybe.
Okay. Do you want to talk? Okay. I'm going to bring up two, and you tell me which one you want to talk about. Do you want to talk about Infinite Crisis by Geoff Johns, or do you want to talk about Scott Pilgrim?
Let's talk about Scott Pilgrim.
Okay, Scott Pilgrim. Yeah.
I just read the first trade in color, and yeah, let's talk about that.
Okay. Yeah. Scott Pilgrim is essentially a hipster 90s video game fever dream, the entire thing. And that's actually it's actually like how a good portion of my life kind of played out, so so it appeals to me on numerous levels. And there's all these little like video game references, like some of them I actually like. There's actually like a I can't write. You know what? I don't want to advertise other sites anyway. But there's a site that has like literally they have like, and it's updated all the time. Like all the little references to different video games and whatnot. And it's just crazy. There's just things that I'd never even noticed or I'd never even would have known. But it's just it's clever, and the whole, you know, evil exes thing is just really what's the word I'm looking for? Charming, great. I guess. Yeah, fucking yeah. Great. Yes, yeah, charming. Very relatable. I think, you know, it's a very it's a slacker triumph kind of story. So I think a lot of people can relate to that.
Before you go on, I just want to say the series is done. There is 6 trades or collections.
They've
recently, within 2012, they started coloring them, which is good. Yes. I read the color one. I didn't get to read the black and white ones because I just haven't bought the black and white ones. The color is great, man. It's really, really good.
Oh, does it? Okay. I haven't even looked at the colored ones.
They're great. There was a sale. It was like $2.99 on Comixology, and I just picked up the color one.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, so I was like...
Yeah. They're on. Oh yeah, they were on sale on. I picked them up because they were on sale on Amazon. They were like $3 a piece.
Oh really?
Yeah, the book. Yeah, like the physical, like black and white. You know,
because there's like a big pack where you can buy all 6 of them for a relatively fair price.
Yes. Yeah. Yeah. So you can get. I mean, you can get them for fairly cheap. So there's absolutely no reason why you shouldn't read it. The movie, I actually think the movie's really good.
You know what? I've only read the first one, but it's funny how you say that because it's like fucking bang on how exactly it follows the comics. And then I made a comment on Reddit or something about that. And somebody said that the director is the same guy that's going to do Ant-Man. And he's like, oh yeah, he always, you know, really follows the source material. I'm like, well, shit, I didn't know that. Like, that gives me even more hope for Ant-Man.
Yeah, the first time I saw that movie, I was like hyperventilating. Like at the beginning, when there was like these random Legend of Zelda like sound effects. And they had the music, and I was just like, oh my god! Like it was just.
And then Derek needed new pants, folks.
Yes, I needed. That's pretty accurate. Scott, as far as,
and it was called what? Scott Pilgrim versus the World, I believe.
The movie, yes, yeah, the movie, yeah. So yeah, the movie's great. The books are great. As far as like, you know how I am. I'm a big two guy, but like for me, it's like, you know, Marvel, DC, Scott Pilgrim.
Really? You know, I heard complaints as far as the movie goes, saying that it should have almost been 2 movies or more because they crammed 6 books into it, and it was like the beginning was, you know, they basically covered the entire first book in like in the first half of the movie, which is great, and then they crammed the last 5 at the end.
They did do that. I think they did an admirable job. However, I think they knew that this wasn't going to be some massive franchise, and that's why they did it.
It still does work in the movies. I mean, it's super quick paced, and you know, it gets you through. And I guess worst case, go read the freaking comics, and you can get, you know, some of the backstory and some of the extra little stuff that they couldn't put into the thing, into the movie or film or whatever you want to call it. No, I agree that it's really, really, really well done. And I think, as a matter of fact, there's 2 copies sitting on the shelves because Kayla owns one and I own one.
Oh, that's awesome. So, that's so cool.
Yeah, there's 2 of them sitting side by side. It's that good. And neither of us have read the comic yet, so we're going to eventually, again, when money permits, I'm going to probably pick up all the colors because it's just done really, really well. Who the hell did the coloring? I just can't remember. Nick Filardi, I think.
Nick.
No, it wasn't Nick. No. Nathan Fairweather, I think. Damn. Wikipedia, you fail me. You fail me, Wikipedia. Well, whoever the colorist is, he's a great guy, and he did a really, really good job, basically. I mean, I have seen some panels of the black and white, and obviously there is a big difference between black and white color. It'd be like when Dave Stewart recolored the first edition, the first... issue of Walking Dead, right? I mean, it's like holy crap, right. You know?
Yeah.
People don't give people don't give colorists the right amount of praise, and it adds such a huge layer.
It does. It really does. And sometimes, like it can make or break a book, really.
Oh yeah, if you get the wrong colorist, or they don't jive with the artist correctly, then it'll ruin it. No matter how good the pencils might be, you know.
Yeah, very, very underrated craft, for sure.
For sure, and I don't envy them. I mean, some of these guys do like 15 books a month, and it's like, how do you do that?
Yeah.
So, right off the top, just because we're running out of time now, and I want to keep this a nice hour-long show because it's almost Walking Dead time.
Oh, yeah.
What else did you have on your list? Just I mean, you obviously had Infinity, which is fairly recent, and I agree, yeah, that's a great
thing. No, Infinite Crisis I had on there.
Oh, you said Infinity by Hickman. Yeah.
Infinite Crisis by Jeff Johns I had on there. And you know what? I would put Infinity on there too. Yeah, sure. Let's throw them both on there. I also just had Amazing Spider-Man and Fantastic Four, various creators. Just, I wasn't going to talk about that because we could have entire series of shows on those books because they've just been going on forever.
I got John Byrne, Fantastic Four, and John Hickman. Yeah. There you go.
that's sometimes that's all you need. What else did I have? Oh, I had Watchmen on there. I also had Batman Nightfall. This is not a comic book, but it's a comic strip. Calvin and Hobbes by Bill Watterson.
Oh, yeah. Do you have that cool collection they have?
There's like there's the hardcover, and there's also a softback there's a trade that you can get. It's everything. It's the entire Calvin and Hobbes collection, and it's on Amazon for like the soft covers, like $50.
No, that's not too bad. Gonna be your list. Guys, you need to read Fear Agent by Rick Remender. Hands down, one of the best he's ever done, and he does great stuff.
Yeah.
So yeah, that's no knock on anything he's doing.
Oh, yeah, that's awesome.
Conan, the stuff from Kurt Busiek and Kerry Nord, and even on, is just great. I bought that big colossal trade with 50 of them or whatever in it, and aside from weighing, 47 pounds, it's just amazing. Definitely recommend it. I mean, obviously you have like The Walking Dead. If you like the show and you're not reading the series, I'm sorry, but you're a fucking idiot. Go support the originals and read it. It will blow your freaking mind. Starman.
It is good.
James Robinson and Tony Harris.
Oh, yeah. Starman. So yeah. Yep. Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah.
Joss Whedon and John Cassaday's Astonishing X-Men. There's an
omnibus. Oh, yes.
I'm going to make Derek Cream's pants in a minute. You got Preacher. I'm not done it yet, but I can already tell so far. You know, it's great. I mean, read it before the show comes out. Preacher. I'm not even worried about the show.
No.
there's a little manga that I've been reading, which I don't read a lot of it because a lot of it's all that stupid, weird, tentacle, fucking, titty Asian bullshit that they do, and that's just not for me.
Some of it's decent. Some of it's,
It's hit or miss, but it's called Vinland Saga, and it's like Vikings and stuff, and it's really cool. I'm not going to say the creator's name because I'm going to butcher it, but it's from Random House and... I can't remember the actual publisher. But if you just look V-I-N Land Saga, you'll find it. It's really, really good. That's it, Derek. We're out of time. Shut up. We're out of time. That's it.
Okay. All right. Fine.
I'm cutting you off, man. Oh, sorry. Transmetropolitan as well. I forgot. That as well. That is amazing. Yeah. Warren Ellis at his best. Okay. Did you want one more? I got one more, Derek. You got one more.
Yeah. Okay. One more. First of all, the first original volume of TMNT.
Oh, from the original creators and everything, way back.
Yes. Yes. Okay. Yes.
I'll give you that. I still haven't read that. I'm still tentative because Kevin Eastman's art doesn't really do it for me, but we'll see. But everybody, that's it. Those are some of our favorites. Those are some of the ones we think you should read. We want you to comment below or email us at allcomic@outlook.com with your thoughts. Do you like us? Sure, you can tell us that too. Do you like our recommendations? Do you hate them? Have you read them? Do you want to read them? Did we make you want to read them? All that fun stuff. Comment. We're still waiting for somebody to comment and say Derek is an asshole so that we can get him to comment on the page. Hopefully iTunes works with me and we can get this up in a relatively good order. Tomorrow is a holiday, so I have lots of time to figure out how to fuck with it and make it work. But that's it, guys. I'm going to go back to playing Pokemon and maybe watch some Walking Dead. Well, of course I'm going to watch some Walking Dead. Who am I kidding? And Derek, anything you want to say?
I apologize if I was stuttering tonight, and I've had a stuttering problem my entire life, so I worked through it. And
everybody's heart just melted, Derek. Nobody cares about your stuttering. it's when your mic makes you sound like a robot, and it's when you say 10 times. In one sentence.
Yeah, I know. I know.
You know?
You know.
You know, everybody, that's it. Until next time, make sure you read some comics. Oh, and make fun of Derek and Chancey. It's always makes my heart smile.
No. I have too many trolls.
Troll Derek, everybody. Goodbye.